Welcome to the Pompeii edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Pompeii disease community.
This is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking today with Dr. Barry Byrne, Director of the Powell Gene Therapy Center at the University of Florida in Gainesville. It's a pleasure to see you again, even if only virtually. Welcome.
Hi, Larry.
So we're here to talk about gene therapy in general and Pompeii disease in particular. Could you start by telling us a little bit about your work with this rare disorder?
Well, Pompeii disease is a rare degenerative muscle and neurological disorder that affects about 3,500 people in the U.S. that we've been studying really for the past 20 years when the first studies were conducted for infantile onset Pompeii disease that we participated here at the university. Since then, there's been marketing approval for one compound, originally known as Myozyme, and still elsewhere in the world called Myozyme, but in the U.S. known as Lumizyme. And now recently, Sanofi has reached marketing approval for another drug called avalglucosidase alfa, which is a next generation form of recombinant alpha glucosidase.
And you said that about 3,500 people have Pompe disease in the United States, correct? Is that the same prevalence elsewhere in the world?
The worldwide prevalence seems to be equivalent in most populations. There are some predispositions in certain communities where there's a higher prevalence of certain genotypes that influence disease severity.
In terms of numbers, how does that compare to Duchenne muscular dystrophy or spinal muscular atrophy in terms of prevalence?
Unlike Duchenne, Pompeii is observed in both males and females. So if you take that into account, it still won't be as prevalent as Duchenne. There are about 20,000 children and young men affected with Duchenne in the U.S. And in terms of SMA, it'd be quite similar.
Mm-hmm. When we speak about gene therapy, there's certainly a lot of optimism and hope. Obviously, you've been working on this for years. And then when we talk about specific diseases, there are actually just a handful of diseases that have gene therapy, effective gene therapies, SMA being one of them. Zolgensma has obviously been a success. Can you talk a bit about the success stories and how they're likely to affect other diseases in terms of research and potential?
Yeah, so in the past year, when there's been wide availability of Zolgensma for treatment of SMA, there have now been in the U.S. and a smaller number in Europe where it's only recently approved, 1,200 doses of Zolgensma administered. In the case of Pompeii, we've done several studies here at the University of Florida with a small number of patients enrolled in a study which both assesses the effect of gene therapy on breathing function and a more recent study that actually investigates the ability to receive multiple doses of AAV, which will be very important for an early onset myopathy like Pompeii, where in order to sustain the effect over the lifespan, a redosing strategy is needed. And so we spent a number of years assessing and implementing that approach to redosing of AAV vectors.
Dr. Byrne, can you explain what the reason is for gene therapy being a one-off treatment and why, in general, it cannot be given again?
Yeah, very good question. So when we react to any viral pathogen or a viral vector in the case of a therapeutic effort, like with AAV, the body responds by making antibodies. Those antibodies can block the access of the viral vector, in this case AAV, to cells and limit its effectiveness. That's the reasoning behind selecting candidates for gene therapy who have very low, in fact, at the lower limit of detection, antibody levels to AAV. The ability to readminister AAV requires that we anticipate the immune response and use a specific regimen that allows for a limited period where the body wouldn't respond to the AAV to allow the gene therapy agent to get to where it's needed and deliver the therapeutic genes. And then it's possible after that to receive AAV in the future. Without that preventative treatment, antibodies develop against the vector, which would prohibit a future use.
And in the case of, for example, Zolgensma, it's been very effective at stopping the progression of the disease of SMA, but it doesn't actually cure SMA, correct?
There are a handful of patients who have now reached the age of 5 after administration of Zolgensma in the newborn period. Those were a small number of patients who were in clinical trials. There are a much larger number who are under 2 years of age and are still being evaluated for what really is going to likely be a new natural history for SMA type 1 and ultimately for the later stages of SMA like SMA 2 and SMA 3. And so it's hard to say that we know what the new natural history will be exactly over time, but we expect that children who have gained milestones that they never would have before attained without Zolgensma treatment will continue to grow and develop without any loss of effect. The reason their effect is seeming so durable in SMA is the main target of the gene therapy are neurons, which don't turn over during the course of your life. Muscle cells, however, are impacted by growth, and the process of a muscle disease causes degeneration and regeneration of muscle. This will lead to a diminished copy number of the AAV vector in muscle cells. So the objectives in muscle-directed gene therapy will be slightly different than in something like SMA, where the neurons are not subject to cell division, where the AAV vectors are diminished over time.
Okay. You mentioned here now on Friday, August 6th, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved avoglucosidase alpha, trade name Nexviazyme, as only the third medication to treat Pompe disease. Could you explain why this is important and what it means to the Pompe disease community?
Yeah, the efforts to develop next generation therapies for Pompe really began almost as soon as the first drug was approved, because there were many bits of evidence that there were strategies that were available to increase the potency of a recombinant enzyme replacement therapy for Pompe. And in its early iterations, this product was called NeoGAA, which had improved on the ability of the protein to target muscle cells in particular. And now, over the course of many years, when this form of second generation alpha-glucosidase was studied, Genzyme was able to advance those several studies now through late phase studies that have led to marketing approval of NeoGAA or avoglucosidase alpha.
Okay. And where does gene therapy research for Pompe stand at the moment?
So the initiatives we began many years ago towards gene therapy for Pompe have evolved from local regional administration to systemic administration for both the infantile form and the late onset form of Pompe. And so we're continuing to advance that program, initially anticipated to be conducted at just one site at the NIH. Will now hopefully be expanded to include other sites across the U.S.
Okay. And while we're on that subject, can you talk just a bit about the potential for gene therapy in Duchenne. Now, I know you've been working on this for many years. Several researchers have been working on the same thing, and yet for some reason, gene therapy for Duchenne seems elusive. Why is that?
Very good question. And I think we learn over the course of these studies the complexity of the underlying disease influences the clinical meaningfulness of the treatment. So several sponsors now working in the space of Duchenne have made really valiant efforts to select the ideal patient population at the right age for this therapy and to see what impact it has on clinical outcomes that will be meaningful to children of those different age groups. And tremendous work has been done really to understand the untreated natural history to help develop clinical trial endpoints. That has actually become very mature over the past 5 years to really understand the disease progression and allow for studies that compare the treated cohort to both those natural history studies and to an untreated control within the same study. And the effort will continue, I think, because there is evidence that those that have received a limited number of patients that have received AAV-based gene therapy do have clinical benefit, and now we'll have to determine, is that durable? Are there alternative strategies to consider to lessen or eliminate adverse events when receiving gene therapy, and how to assess also the benefits related to cardiopulmonary function, which is another important mm-hmm. aspect in the later stages of the disease.
I do have one more question, if I can, and that brings me back to the issue of newborn screening. You said that because of increased newborn screening, you're finding that Pompe is a lot more common than you had originally anticipated. From what I understand, something like 38 states are now screening for SMA. I don't know how many are screening for Pompe. What about Duchenne? Is there an effort being made to add Duchenne to the panel for newborn screening?
There had been important studies to demonstrate the proof of concept for Duchenne screening done in the state of Ohio by investigators at Nationwide Children's. And of course, that would facilitate early diagnosis. The challenging part is until there's an approach to treating younger children, which would lead to a sustained benefit. Newborn screening won't itself lead to changing the optimal age of treatment under this current strategy, where the treatment may be expected to last a prolonged period, because the durability of the effect will be inversely related to the age at which the patients are treated. So the youngest patients who grow the most after treatment will not likely have a sustained benefit. So we have to focus on the current plan from the existing sponsors is to focus on this young ambulant population, as well as some studies that are beginning to address the needs of the non-ambulant population. Possibly using the findings from the Pompe studies, it may be possible to lower the age of access to these treatments, even for patients with Duchenne.
Dr. Byrne, thank you very much. I think we're out of time. Really appreciate your efforts and time in making the effort to explain these very complicated subjects to our audience. Thank you very much. Nice talking
Thanks.
To you again.
Thanks. Very good to see you again.
Okay.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.